cases scheduled on the 1:30 docket, Colorado Consumer Health Initiative versus Colorado Board of Health and People in the Interest of AE. Are the attorneys present on each case? And the AE case? All right, you should have been provided a handout of our procedures. If anyone in the courtroom has a cell phone or pager, please make sure it's turned off so it doesn't interrupt us during the oral argument. And let's begin with CCHI.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Sink. With me today is Norton Cutler. We represent the appellant, Colorado Consumer Health Initiative. In 1996, Congress passed HIPAA to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the health information system and to encourage the modernization of medical record keeping. The Department of Health and Human Services enacted the HIPAA privacy rule to implement the requirements of HIPAA and, among other things, limited the fees medical service providers could charge to patients and their personal representatives for copies of medical records to a reasonable and cost-based fee. Thus, in part, the HIPAA privacy rule was designed to help control the rising costs of healthcare. In the nearly 7 years since the HIPAA privacy rule went into effect in 2003, the Colorado Board of Health has never conducted nor relied upon a cost study to justify the copying fees for patients and personal representatives authorized in its existing patient copy rule.
Excuse me, counsel, let me interrupt you there, please. Is that last fact that you just mentioned undisputed?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. The board does not dispute that it has never conducted a cost study post or from 2001 to the present.
What about at 2001?
Nor at the adoption of the 2001 amendment. I don't know quite how far back the copy fee record goes, but the last petition prior to the 2008 one was the 2001 petition for rulemaking, and the 2001 petition, so far as the record reveals, was not supported by a cost study.
Because that fact is not clearly undisputed from what I read in the briefs, I just want to give the your opposing counsel a heads up. I'm going to ask if you concede that fact when it comes your turn.
Well, and what do you mean by cost study? Are there different ways to conduct a cost study?
Absolutely there are. At the bare minimum, however, what we would require, what we believe HIPAA requires, is some investigation into the cost for labor and supplies associated with making physical photocopies of medical records. And that inquiry into the cost for labor and supplies was not performed either at the 2008 amendment stage or, we contend, at the 2001 adoption of the rules that predate the effective date of HIPAA.
Mr. Sink, just to go back to what you were commenting on a couple of questions ago, does the record contain the administrative record of the 2001 amendments?
It does not, Your Honor, nor does it contain most of the material before the board at the 2008 stage. When the appeal went to the district court from the board, the parties filed motions, cross motions for summary judgment. The Colorado Consumer Health Initiative designated the agency record for the district court. Before that record could be transferred to the district court ruled on the motions for summary judgment, denying Colorado Consumer Health Initiative's motion.
So for clarification, I thought that the only thing that the district court didn't have was the transcript of an oral argument. Was more than that not transmitted to the trial court judge?
We believe more than that was not transmitted, Your Honor. I know the board has argued that most of the documentation was in fact attached to some of their pleadings before the district court, and some of it was. However, things like the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative's counter petition and complaint in opposition to the 2007 petition was not included as well. So,
but didn't they ask you to come back on that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Didn't they ask you to resubmit that?
They did ask us, they did argue that we could not submit it as a independent petition for rulemaking. However, as we contend the record before the agency would reveal, there was an agreement to consider that petition as an objection to the association's petition for a rulemaking. So that information was before the board as an objection to the pending petition.
Mr. Singh, I have one more question. Your argument is predicated on the premise that there must be a cost study. Is there any language in either HIPAA or the state statutes or regulations that specifically require a cost study?
There is nothing in HIPAA or in the state statutes that dictates a manner of inquiry into the cost structure of copying. We would contend that the requirement of a cost study or of a cost-based rate necessarily entails some inquiry into cost. We call that a cost study, but we don't mean to impose some high standard as to the sort of evidence or manner in which the board must conduct that study.
Does the CCHI represent patients or personal representatives?
CCHI represents various other associations that have interest in patients, such as the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless or the Colorado AARP, but it is an association of representative associations.
So CCHI does not have individual members?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. It has associations who are members, and it was a participant below in the agency procedure, which is what conferred standing on the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative to appeal the board's denial of its objections.
Excuse me, say that again, what you just said. I didn't catch how you have standing when you have only other organizations as members of your organization.
The organization was a participant before the board in the rulemaking proceeding, and its petition and objections were denied. So as a participant in the proceedings, we argue direct standing. In addition, if to the extent that were insufficient, we would argue a third-party standing theory for an association representing groups who directly represent individuals.
So is it your view that the National Rifle Association would have standing if it participated in the administrative proceedings, assuming that it had otherwise no interest in any way in these HIPAA regulations?
If it directly submitted a petition and the board addressed the petition, didn't reject the petition, and then was denied on merits, then yes, we would argue as a participant in the hearing, it would have some form of direct standing.
So from your standpoint then, Mr. Singh, it becomes an aggrieved party because its petition was denied.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I thought, again, the petition was not denied. They said you needed to resubmit it.
Partly the petition was deferred, and then but by agreement, it was also considered as an objection to the association's pending rulemaking.
So you're saying that you are also aggrieved, apart from your own, from CCHI's own petition, you're an aggrieved party because your objection to the, I don't know how, is there a way that you pronounce the acronym for the other side?
We try to avoid it by calling it the association, but we say AHIOS, but the Association of Health Information Outsourcing Services.
Okay, so would you be an aggrieved party because you have, simply because you objected to AHIOS' proposal?
Well, we would agree that we should have direct standing based on that denial as well. We would also argue we have alternative standing under a third-party associational standing doctrine, but that's the direct basis for our standing.
Right, I understand that you're making a dual argument. The one concern I have about your associational standing issue is that, as I understand it, an association can have standing if its members also would independently have standing. And what you're making is an argument that says that you have to say that not only do CCHI's members have standing, but in turn the members of their constituent organizations would have standing. So it's like a standing argument once removed. Am I making myself clear?
You are, Your Honor. Although I would not want to go so far as to concede that no associational member of CCHI doesn't in fact have independent standing. I don't want to go that far. But Colorado Consumer Health Initiative does represent associations who have an interest in the medical services industry.
Okay. 244106, subsection 3, requires that the person be injured or harmed, doesn't it? To seek judicial review of agency action?
For direct petition in a district court, I believe that's the case, Your Honor. I don't think that's exhaustive of the basis for standing. As we argued before at the district court where this was raised, we thought that participation in the proceedings conferred adequate standing, and the district court did not find that we lacked standing, and to my knowledge, the board has not cross-appealed that issue.
Okay.
The Colorado Consumer Health Initiative then argues that the patient copy rule violates HIPAA for two reasons. The first is that HIPAA requires a reasonable cost-based fee, and because the board has never conducted a cost study, there is no evidence or record support for a finding that the rates that stay in place from 2001 with respect to patients and their personal representatives is cost-based. Additionally, as the board acknowledged in their answer brief, the 2001 petition included ancillary costs, and those ancillary costs continued through in that 2000 rate until present, and the HIPAA privacy rule clearly precludes the inclusion of ancillary costs in the medical fees that may be charged to patients and their personal representatives.
Mr. Singh, just for clarification, what in the record or where in the record does it state that the 2001 regulations included ancillary costs?
In the record that we have that has come to us from the proceedings below at the district court, the board conceded in their reply to the response to the motion for summary judgment, that's at the CD record page 158, page 14, quote, in 2001, the board was within its authority to adopt fees that included the costs of retrieval and handling for both third parties and individuals. The board elsewhere in its brief acknowledges those sorts of handling fees and costs are in fact ancillary under the definition of HIPAA.
So, and then you argued in your reply brief where you adverted to something that Ohio had said, or the Board of Health had said at some earlier point, that the change in the cost of living between 2001 and 2008 could have made the 2001 rates cost-based, even though they weren't at first. Could you respond to that?
Our argument is that in the absence of any actual cost data, it's difficult, it's impossible to judge, in fact, whether or not the rising medical costs impact have increased or decreased and therefore impacted the fee allowed under the 2001 rulemaking. All we ask is that those fees, those costs be determined based on a cost inquiry. In the hypothetical that the costs have increased, it is possible they have closed down some of that margin for ancillary costs. How much, again, we have no record evidence to be able to determine.
Council, let me interrupt you one more time. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but I want to ask this question. You seem to argue in your brief, throughout your brief, that the patient copy rule is unreasonable because it's based solely upon the national fee survey submitted by Ohio's. But that particular argument is not set out in a separate headed argument, under a separate heading, rather. Are you making that argument in your brief?
We are making it as a subsidiary principally of the HIPAA argument, Your Honor. In other words, HIPAA requires a cost study, and the inclusion of a 48-state summary does not meet the requirement of a reasonable cost-based fee under HIPAA. So to the extent that the board wants to rely on the information provided by the Ohio's petition, we would argue that the Ohio's petition would have needed to have cost-based information, and there's no guarantee that the state summary fees that were included in that petition or evidence that those fees were in fact cost-based. In addition to the HIPAA grounds, of course, we argue that the Colorado statute imposes its own requirement that fees be reasonable costs. That inclusion of the word costs also triggers a responsibility to investigate into the cost structures of labor and supplies. We would also argue that the statute, by grouping together patients and designated representatives, does not allow for a discriminatory rate between patients or their designated representatives without justification, and no such justification was included in the agency's determination below. Additionally, we would argue that the inclusion of the ancillary costs are without justification in light of the fact that the board conceded and the petition below conceded, the rulemaking petition conceded, that those costs are frequently passed back on to the patient. And given that knowledge, the board could not reasonably then impose a higher fee on designated representatives when it knew those higher fees would be passed back to the patient.
What was the board's justification for having a two-tiered fee structure?
As I understand it, partly it was an argument from again, rising costs, what they perceive to be rising costs in the absence of a cost study. And partly in the petition itself, the statement that those fees will be passed back on to the patients is viewed as a justification for imposing the higher fees. In other words, that the attorneys or the insurance companies wouldn't actually bear the brunt of the fee because that would get passed back on.
I don't think you've answered my question with all due respect. What I'm trying to find out is, what is the reason or the rationale for having a two-tiered fee structure? If costs are rising, why couldn't costs have been increased for patients as well as for designated representatives, so there'd be only one higher rate for everybody?
Had there been costs justification for that, Your Honor, that would be acceptable. It would be acceptable to have a single tier fee. And in fact, that's what the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative is arguing for, without, in the absence of any justification to the contrary.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Elisa Campbell, attorney registration number 30632. I'm an assistant attorney general appearing on behalf of the State Board of Health. Your Honors, the record below does support the district court's summary judgment ruling in favor of the board, because the issue below was whether the board acted in an arbitrary, capricious, or unconstitutional manner, or exceeded its authority or acted contrary to statutory requirements in its rulemaking. And the district court specifically found that CCHI failed to provide sufficient evidence that the fees applicable to individuals violated federal regulations, specifically HIPAA, or that the fees applicable to individuals or third parties were unreasonable under Colorado statute. So unless the court has any immediate questions, I would like to address CCHI's arguments in the following order. First, to talk about the record and what was transmitted a little bit, that this court seemed to have some questions about that. And then just discuss generally the fees applicable to individuals and then the fees applicable to the third parties.
Well, I have a question, Ms. Campbell.
Yes.
And it's the same question that I asked counsel for CCHI. Do you concede, does the board concede that it did not conduct any cost study, cost analysis, or cost inquiry other than the national survey submitted by AHIOS for the 2008 rulemaking and the 2001 rulemaking?
For the 2008 rulemaking, that's correct. For the 2001 rulemaking, no, I do not concede that. We don't have the 2001 record in front of us. CCHI also made some statements in their opening and reply brief that the board agreed that the 2001 fees included ancillary costs, and that is not correct. The board always argued as if ancillary costs were included. What counsel read to the court is true. The board stated that in 2001 they could have included these ancillary costs in the fees, but the board has never said yes, these fees were included. And I would submit to this court that it really doesn't matter what happened in 2001. Under APA rulemaking procedures, an action to contest the validity of a rule has to be commenced within 30 days of the effective date of that rule. So what we're talking about here are copy fees applicable to third parties, which was amended in, I think, February of 2008, and copy fees applicable to individuals, which is part of the rule that was amended in 2008, but those fees remained the same since 2001. So the opportunity for contesting what happened in 2001 passed almost a decade ago. We're talking about...
Excuse me.
Ms. Campbell, are you suggesting that because there was no challenge to the 2001 rules within 30 days of their promulgation, that they're forever considered to be legitimate and can never be challenged by anybody for any reason?
No, Your Honor. When this rule was amended in February of 2008, the validity of the rulemaking could be contested at that point. But we're talking about, was the rulemaking valid in 2008?
But what I'm wondering about, though, is with the effective date of HIPAA in 2003, the CCHI argument is at that point, the 2001 regulations became inconsistent with HIPAA. And if you're saying that they had that CCHI or anybody else was required to challenge those regulations within 30 days of their promulgation. Obviously, that would have been impossible to do since HIPAA was not effective until 2003. So what then could anybody have done in 2003 to challenge the validity of those regulations on the basis that they were inconsistent with HIPAA?
Well, that's a good question. I would note, first of all, that CCHI offered no evidence. And let me just state, I think this the key issue in this case is burden of proof. It's CCHI's burden to prove that this rule is invalid. And they provided no evidence of any other state restructuring their copy fees subsequent to April of 2003. And I was able to find no authority requiring the department to do that.
Well, again, let me say to you, as I said to Mr. Singh, I don't think you've answered my question. With all due respect, what I'm trying to find out from you is if your assertion is that the 2001 regulations had to have been challenged within 30 days of their promulgation, what, if anything, could either CCHI or any other party have done in 2003 to challenge the 2001 regulations once HIPAA became effective?
I don't know. The answer off the top of my head is nothing, because there wasn't any rulemaking in 2003. Now, this rule was amended in 2008, and that was CCHI's opportunity to provide sufficient evidence that the rule violated HIPAA
well,
at that
point.
Well,
you would agree that HIPAA as a federal law would take precedence over any state statute or regulation, would you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So there, doesn't that suggest that there must be some procedure available to parties that would contend that the 2001 regulations were inconsistent with HIPAA?
Your Honor, I know in April of 2003, covered entities did have a certain amount of time to come into HIPAA compliance as far as privacy practices and policies. But again, I could not find anything about copy fees and what states were required to do as far as looking at these fees and restructuring them if necessary. And well, CCHI presented nothing in their briefs either on that
issue. Ms. Campbell, I guess my question is, I understood Mr. Singh to say this action was brought under 244106, which is an appeal of an adverse agency action of some kind.
Yes.
So I don't see how that statute would apply. They would have to bring some kind of an independent action if they felt it was contrary to federal requirements. Is that not correct?
I would agree with you on that. And HIPAA does not provide a private right of action. This case is brought under the Administrative Procedures Act 244106. Therefore, CCHI was required to establish that the board acted arbitrarily, capriciously, unconstitutionally in amending these fees.
Now, my question to you is similar to what I asked Mr. Singh. What about the question of standing? You raised that below but did not pursue that on appeal?
We did not, Your Honor, and I have to say I'm not prepared to address that today. We've operated under the assumption that they had standing to do this under the APA. They certainly do not have standing to bring a HIPAA private right of action. But if the court finds otherwise, I understand that.
Let me ask you, you mentioned the burden of the burden that CCHI carries in this appeal, and Judge Furman mentioned that this proceeding is under 244106.
Yes.
But also it brings up an interesting question that this was a summary judgment entered by the trial court.
Yes.
So what is our standard of review when we look at those that long list under 244106,
right,
and when we also consider this as the grant of a summary judgment? How do you say that we should review this?
Well, I believe this court should look at the summary judgment de novo, and the issue below, I guess that would apply to the issue below, whether the board acted arbitrarily, capriciously. That's what the district court was looking at. Did the board act arbitrarily, capriciously, unconstitutionally? And since summary judgment is a de novo review, my contention is this court needs to determine whether the district court had enough evidence in front of it to make that determination under those standards, the arbitrary and capricious standard.
Well, it would seem to me that, sir, let me follow up on that, please. It would seem to me that if we look at this as a summary judgment, then the board would carry some burden of coming forward with undisputed facts upon which the board would be entitled to judgment as a matter of law.
Correct.
And when I read your briefs and look at the facts here, I want to see if this is correct. In your motion to dismiss and motion for judgment on the pleadings, no, it was in your brief, I'm sorry. It was indicated that what the trial court had before it was the 2008 rule, the 2001 rule, and the AHIOS petition for rulemaking. Is that it?
The board had, or the, I'm sorry, the district court had in front of it the AHIOS petition, which included the basis and purpose for the amendment, the regulatory analysis, and a list of rates. My understanding is the only thing the district court did not have in front of it was a transcript of the rulemaking hearing that occurred in January, but otherwise they had pretty much everything. And I'd like to add, just for the record, it was CCHI that filed for the motion for summary judgment before the board had even filed its answer to their complaint. So they, you know, they jumped into this fairly quickly asking for summary judgment. And there is the Rooks v. Zavaris case out there that says, whatever on motions for cross motions for summary judgment, whatever the court has in front of it, that's all that needs to be considered in making a decision.
I thought the statute provided the standard of review for the district court and the court of appeals.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
24.4106 subsection 7, the long list that you were citing, provides a district court review of the agency action. Subsection 11 refers the court of appeals back to the district court standard of review. So why are we not bound simply by that standard of review that's included in the statute?
Right, the arbitrary and capricious standard.
It's a long list in there.
Right, right.
But yes, in that litany.
That's my understanding, is that this court is looking at what happened at the district court new, but you're going by that same standard that's in 24.4106.
That's a little bit different than summary judgment, is it not?
It is, but I believe the district court was within its bounds to rule, make a summary judgment ruling based on those factors, because CCHI presented no evidence that showed the board acted.
And the court did cite that statute and that standard.
Correct.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, regarding the fees applicable to individuals, what I would address in CCHI's argument earlier, CCHI made the statement that HIPAA requires a cost study, and there's no requirement for a cost study for either fees applicable to individuals or third parties. It seemed down in the district court and in the briefs, CCHI's argument was simply, well, these must include ancillary costs because there was no study done. And case law, as cited in our brief, has stated that speculative arguments or unsupported arguments are not enough to withstand summary judgment, and that appears to be all that was offered in this case. There was no evidence provided that there was a violation of HIPAA or that the fees applicable to third parties were unreasonable under Colorado statute.
Ms. Campbell, I'd like to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Sink. Look,
yes.
Can you explain what the board's justification was or is for having a two-tiered fee structure for copying costs?
My understanding is that's not unusual in all of the states, or at least in the 42 states that the fees, we got this national average from. Likely there are two tiers because the individual fees cannot include ancillary costs. They can only include the cost of labor and supplies, whereas fees for individual or for third parties can include these ancillary costs. And it doesn't seem reasonable or sensible to make the healthcare facilities bear the burden of all of these costs. So it's not unusual for them to have the two tiers where they can recoup some of these ancillary costs with the third party copies. That would be my guess.
So in Colorado law, if I understand it, correctly, requires that the cost be reasonable.
That's correct.
So is your assertion then that you, one set of costs for patients and another set of costs for designated representatives or others are both reasonable?
Oh, absolutely. The Webb case and the Chart One case both state that for third-party copy fees, you can charge ancillary costs, so those are reasonable costs.
Well, I understand that you cited those cases in your brief, but did those cases were not Colorado cases, so they didn't interpret, or did they interpret a state statute that said that the cost must be reasonable?
Not to my knowledge. But when there's the case law saying these states can include ancillary costs, our argument was, well, then those must be reasonable costs. At the 2008 rulemaking hearing, AHIOS presented evidence that many healthcare facilities outsource these copy fees, just in the interest of it's more cost-effective, more secure, more efficient. And like I say, that claim was unrefuted, so I presume those would be reasonable costs then as well, as far as what the board was looking at during the rulemaking proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent argument.